Welcome to Ask Wynn, everyone. A couple of programming announcements. One, I cannot say what's going on just quite yet because we're working out logistics of, I almost said the kinks, of a potential publishing deal. I just got a call from a publisher this morning who's looking at me to publish my book, basically, The Power of LinkedIn. Basically, let's just put it that way, The Power of LinkedIn. And they finally got back to me. The other one is April 9th or April 19th. I will be out of the office for part of the day. So that being said, no podcast recordings because I just got confirmation on something else this morning that I really need to do. It's dealing with my trust, believe it or not. And I just got confirmation that either one representative or two is coming to my house and they're going to set up a trust, which I've known about since I've been 17 years old. I'm lucky enough to have a trust. So that's what I'm doing on the April 9th or April 19th. So I'll just be out of the office, but I will have my assistant on duty that day. I may have my phone turned off so my phone doesn't keep buzzing when I'm in meeting with those guys. But they are coming either to see me or we're going to meet them publicly. And so hopefully everything is all straight with that. And as I said, I'm working on the logistics deal of going with a small publisher. But enough programming announcements and enough of me rambling on. I'm going to let Miss Elizabeth take it away and explain more of what she does and all that good stuff.
Thank you, Wynn. And I'm Elizabeth Craig, and I write Cozy Mysteries, which are similar. They're traditional mysteries for anyone out there who is not sure exactly what type of mysteries those are. Similar to what Agatha Christie wrote. I would never compare myself otherwise to Agatha Christie. But the similar type of story where the focus is more on the whodunit puzzle instead of forensics, or there's not a lot of gore in these stories. The stories are usually placed in a small town setting, and like I said, the focus is on the puzzle and the characters and that sort of thing. I've got several different series, and I also share writing links and information on my blog and on Twitter to help writers find information and resources. That's it in a nutshell.
That's it in the Reader's Digest version. Well,
yes.
My first question out of the truth, you actually answered my first question. I'm like, what is a cozy mystery? But I got that answer. I'm like, now I don't need to ask that question. But I will ask this. Were you in the professional culprit world before you decided to become a writer, or you decided to experience writing in college, or how did all that work?
That is a good question. I have said before, I'm pretty much a one-trick pony, and this is the only trick I can write. And that's pretty much the only thing that I'm good at. And so I did start with this really early. I was writing stories. You know how kids do. I was writing stories in second grade even. And I knew that's what I always wanted to do. And I did start out with the big publishing companies. And now I write totally for myself. I took my characters back and I self-publish now instead of traditionally publish. And that is just a better financial decision for most writers, I think.
Yeah, because As I said, as I made this announcement this morning, I'm actually dealing with a publisher, supposedly, right now, who's out of Florida, and when I got the phone call from them this morning saying, we want to publish your book, they go, well, we use Ingram Sparks to publish books. And I'm like, well, ma'am, this is what I said to the woman. I'm like, ma'am, Ingram Sparks is free. So I'm wondering, and this is on the small side, I'm wondering if this is a good decision. And then I asked him on LinkedIn, I said, well, would you pay me electronically? And they didn't get what I was saying. And I said, electronically, via PayPal. And I was like, hello? Hello?
Yeah.
You're dealing with a potential order. And I'm like, do you have any track record? And do you have, I'm like, you guys don't know what I've been through with my books. So
right.
Why, Elizabeth, did you decide to pull every single light under the sun from a traditional publisher? Were they mean to you, or were they just not good fit? Or can you tell my listeners that?
Sure, absolutely. And you asked the right questions, it sounds like, with your conversation with the publisher. And there's also a couple of different websites that talk about, you know, good publishers and bad publishers. And it's hard to tell the difference. I think small presses, like you mentioned, they can be really, you know, they can be really good publishers. Not to say that I did work with Penguin Random House and I worked with Midnight Ink, and I didn't have a bad experience. I liked the editors that I worked with for the most part. I liked the covers that they gave me. What I didn't like as much were the royalties. And then later on, when I started self-publishing one series, they just dropped. They were like, nope, you know, we're done. And I just picked it back up and started self-publishing it. And when I saw that I could do that, you know, once you realize that you can do it and you can break through and just have a direct connection to the reader, then sometimes, you know, you're like, why don't I just do this, you know? And
yeah,
it did seem with Penguin Random House, obviously they've had quite a few cutbacks. They don't do so much the 5-book series right off the bat. They may do a 3-book offer or 2-book. And at the very end, they were offering me like a digital only deal. And it's like, my goodness, like you're saying, I mean, we know how to do that, right? I mean, we're able to do digital only, or you know, as you were saying, Ingram Sparks, you could do that yourself. I'd do that myself too.
Yeah.
So you start wondering what benefit are they giving you? And, you know, at first it's kind of nice because you feel, I don't know, a little bit of validation maybe, but if you don't need validation, you know, then you just feel like, well, I'm just going to take this show on the road myself. And it sounds like that's, you know, obviously that's what you've been doing, I think, some too. So you have to think, is this a good deal for me or not?
Well, I'm actually going to query agents. I'm actually not going with the small press side because, quite frankly, they seem like a scam. They seem like a scam. And the fact that they're not answering my questions and not getting my questions, I'm like, that's not good.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
So,
yeah, that's definitely a red flag.
In the works. And I have a book proposal in the works, and I have a book being edited as we speak right now, and so I think I'm going to wait and see if I query 10 agents. 10 agents is going to be my ultimate goal, and see who picks it up. And then if no one picks it up, I'm going to self-publish it, you guys, because that's the best option. I mean, you can make a self-published book into a traditional published book if you take the time and care and craftsmanship. And so how did it feel to you, Elizabeth, to see your books finally out of greedy, I won't say witches of traditional publishing. I guess I just did. Greedy witches of self-publishing and greedy witches of traditional publishing. And how did it feel to you to finally have your rights back and finally get what you wanted?
It was a great feeling. It was a really good feeling, and I haven't, you know, for one of the series, I couldn't get the rights back. That's the Memphis Barbecue series, and I was locked down. I knew that from the start. I was aware that I was not going to be able to get my rights back for that one series because it was a rights for hire deal. But I was able to get them back for the other two with, you know, some, I mean, I had to keep going back, you know, a few times to one of the publishers. But it felt really good because you know that you can do what you want with them. And I wanted, in particular, I had readers asking for my books in audio to have audiobooks made of them.
Yeah.
And because I have one series that is almost all in audio. And so they didn't understand why one of my other series wasn't in audio, and it was because I didn't have the rights to do that. And so it's a good feeling, or I can have them translated, or I can have them, you know, the distribution go overseas, because the distribution deals I had before were U.S., Canada. That was pretty much what it was. And there's a whole world out there of people who speak English and obviously other languages as well. And it's nice. It's a really good feeling to be able to, you know, to reach those readers.
Yeah, it is. And just to do a plug for my own work here, as I'm interviewing Elizabeth, it's Cerebral Palsy Awareness Month. You guys know, or should know by now, that Cerebral Palsy is my badge of honor. I'm actually succeeding with Cerebral Palsy, lived with it. It will be 31 years in June, and so June 22nd to be exact. And so I self-published my first autobiography, I Come a Win, which still to this day can be found on Amazon. And even when I get an agent, or if I go with a small press, I Come a Win will still be my own work. If people mess with I Come a Win, I will heads will roll, let's basically put it that way, because I Come a Win sells, it's one of the best projects I've ever done, and it's one of my best sellers. Also, I made it to Amazon number one with my first autobiography right out of a suit. And so that was a really cool accomplishment. But Elizabeth, what is your favorite book that you have read, and what is your favorite book that you have written also?
Oh, that's tough. Yes, and congratulations to you. That must have made you feel good. That's one of those things that, you know, you're like, oh, wow. I mean, I've inspired people as well as raised awareness, which is, you know, that's a double win there. My favorite book, I would have to say, is Murder on the Orient Express, which I think probably almost everybody knows this book now, because if they haven't read it, it's been made into a movie so many different times. But it really was the book that inspired me to become a mystery writer, and that's why I listed as my favorite book, because it was the most important book to me, I think. As far as my favorite book that I've written, that is, you know, they always say, oh, you're not supposed to have a favorite book because it's like having a favorite child or something. You're not supposed to. But I will admit there are a couple of books of mine that are my favorites. I particularly like Body and Book Club. And I like that book, and I hate it too, because it was a funny book. And sometimes I don't write that funny, you know. I mean, sometimes I'm feeling humorous, and I can be a funny writer, and I can pull it off. And that book, I did pull it off. I did a really good job with the humor in that book. But at the same time, now every book that I've written past then, readers have been like, it's okay. You know, it's not as funny as A Body at Book Club. I wrote myself into a corner.
And now I'm going to ask you this. First of all, I'm going to ask you, what is a typical day like for you? And then I'm going to ask you, do you ever get writer's block? And how do you get over it, if so? So what is a typical day like for you?
A typical day for me is me getting up about 5 o'clock in the morning and getting ready, going downstairs, letting the dog out, and starting to write. And for me, I've been doing that for so many years now. It is almost, it's like muscle memory. You know, it's just like I know exactly what I'm going to do, and I just sit down and do it. I also try to fit in another writing session later in the day, either late morning or sometimes early afternoon. It used to be that I would drive my kids' carpools at that time, and I'd be sitting in this long carpool line of cars and writing, you know, like trying to make room between the steering wheel and myself and being able to type it out. But now my kids are, you know, well, one's in college and one's driving herself to high school, so I don't have to do that anymore. But still, that time of day, I still do it because it's almost, like I said, it's just like I'm driven to do it at that time because I did it for so many years. And the rest of the day, I'm doing things like answering business. This probably looks a lot like your day, when I'm answering emails having to do with business. I am on social media, not directly promoting my book, but sort of building up my writer's platform and coming up with ideas, and just also just doing business stuff like just changing prices on KDP or monitoring that, or working on a translation project. A lot of different things going on. I would like to say that I've had writer's block because I've had this question a few times, and honestly, I write when I'm uninspired, and that is not a very nice thing to say, but it's true. I'm rarely inspired to write, but I know that's what I do every day at 5 o'clock, so I pull it out, and I'm able to write, and I think do a pretty good job, or at least I haven't had any complaints, and not really feel like I'm very inspired to do it, if that makes any sense at all. I actually spoke to a high school on Monday, and one of the kids asked me that same question, or he said, how do you get in the mood to write, or how do you get in a more creative mood? And I kind of felt bad because I don't ever really feel in a creative mood, or if I do, I'm like out somewhere and I get an idea. You know how sometimes that happens?
Yeah.
You'll be out and you get an idea. It's random, right? It's not when I'm writing, actually, and I'll have to write it down or something. But I know a lot of writers get into that mood with music, and for me, I have to have lyric-free music. I have to listen to New Age or jazz. I don't know if you're like that.
I do.
Yeah.
I'm actually in the process. I have two laptops. One is strictly for schoolwork, and it's a PC, and so mm-hmm. I do not have any writing on that one. The other one is a Mac, which when I get that fixed or when I get a new one, I'm going to use that one strictly for writing because I'm like, yeah. So now I have two separate computers / an iPad / I'm all set up to But, and the reason why I'm not writing now is because I have a book at the editor's right now. So that's why I'm not writing now. I did my quota this year so quickly that my ultimate goal is to write 6 books a year, and I don't care how long they take, as long as they're good. But I did my quota so quickly this year that I'm like, well, let's focus on journalism now. Journalism.
Yeah.
Great. And so that's why I'm not writing you guys. So I feel like the ultimate is the writer's block, which I'm happy to say, and Elizabeth is happy to say, that we don't get writer's block because we can just write about anything anywhere. Jeez.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that sounds terrible for me to say, but and I'm writing. I mean, some days I feel like maybe what I've written isn't very good, but it can be fixed later, right? I mean, you know, that's the thing. You write it anyway, whether or not you want to write it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth, if you had to be educated by anyone inside or outside your field, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
And I would have to say I would love it to be Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens. I just absolutely love, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he was so warm and he had such wonderful humor. And as I said, I can get good humor, but I would like to improve my humor in my books. And I would love for him to have been able to teach me a little bit about storytelling, for sure.
Yeah.
How about you? Would you like to have educated you?
Oh, God. I would... You guys will think I'm crazy when I say this, but J.K. Rowling.
She's great.
If I had my brothers in writing, if I had my brothers in education, I would pick writing over education. You guys know that by now. I also have a day job, which they kind of put me on a month-long sabbatical from that day job. So now I can write more and focus on my books more. But if I had to choose a writing mentor, it would be J.K. Rowling, because I was so fascinated. And I'm glad I listened to the whole Harry Potter series on audio tape. But my God, I can't captivate my readers like she did. I cannot.
Right.
I mean, J.K. Rowling's a magical sauce or something, because I can't captivate my readers like she did, and muggles and wizardry, and even though Harry Potter now for kids is for adults too, and I listened to it when I was a child now. And so I...
Oh, you're making me feel old now.
If I had my brothers, I would like J.K. Rowling to teach me how to captivate my readers and how to get my readers stuck in my books.
Yeah. Because she had the ability to hook readers so well, and her world building was so unique and just so in-depth. And you felt like you were there, you know, you felt like you were part of the world.
It was.
Yeah, good
it
pick.
It is and was. And Harry Potter was actually a self-published before it got picked up, too, which I think that was amazing. And then J.K. Rowling was actually homeless before she came up with the idea of Harry Potter. I didn't know if you guys knew that, but Harry Potter got about 10 rejection letters before she got picked up. And tidbits, you didn't know we knew tidbits about Harry Potter.
Those publishers have got to be kicking themselves.
I want to know from J.K. Rowling how she captivated her readers, and she did Harry Potter's about a 12-book series now, and I listened to all of them. And if you guys haven't picked up Harry Potter yet, you'll be, I'm sorry that I gave you my favorite book in this podcast, because Harry Potter is one of them. So just Google Harry Potter. It's still on Amazon to this day. I know it. And how I listen to it is on audio tapes, because I was, when I listened to it, I was doing a lot of driving to medical appointments. And so due to CP, Harry Potter Company, and it also kept my mom company too, because my mom got really into it, too. And so, that being said, it's not a book only for kids. It's a book for adults.
Yeah. Yeah, I was an adult when I was reading it. I was totally sucked in. And that's so cool that you and your mom shared that together. I think that's...
Yeah, we shared that together. Now I need someone to give me an audiobook so I can get caught up.
Yeah. Those are expensive.
I need someone to like gift me an audible subscription so I can get caught up on my audiobooks. although I'm thinking that my local library and local libraries actually have audiobooks on MP3 now, so I might just look into what they have, because Audible's expensive and Audible does not support this podcast. I wish they did, but audiobooks are wonderful, and that's why Elizabeth and I suggest all books on audio, because you guys don't have time to read books. I mean, when's the last time we sat and read a good book? I just got a book yesterday, a paperback book that I plan to read, not this week, obviously, but as soon as I leave my day job for the summer, I plan to read that paperback book. And I said, yes, read that paperback book. And I have a ton of other paperbacks that I need to read from fans who are authors. And Elizabeth, hand me an audiobook. You can get me to more likely read your book in audio. And why are you such a fan of audio? May I ask that?
Yeah, and I am a fan of audio. I have seen, I have consistent income as an author on the author side of things. With that. And for me, it started, you know, I started back with audio as soon as I could, and that's through ACX, which distributes to Audible and distributes to iTunes. And, I think those are the major players. I think they distribute elsewhere too, but obviously those are the two bigger outlets. And I just think people, like you're saying, you spent a lot of time in the car, people are commuting or, you know, people are doing chores or they're working out or whatever it is they're doing, and they want to do, people are multitasking. That's one way to do it is to read at the same time and to make that time more useful than just sitting in traffic or whatever it is you're doing.
Yeah. Or spending time in the doctor's office. No, my favorite is podcast. Although if I can find a good audiobook, makes me happy. I will, that will be my next investment, back in my audiobooks. So when you guys ask me what my favorite book is, I can tell you what I'm reading now. And instead I'm giving you old favorites, which I feel bad about. I felt bad about it yesterday, and I felt bad about it for the past month and a half, because my audio retention is better than my reading retention, and people know that. And so, Elizabeth, where can people find you, and how can people get your book?
Okay, yes. They can email me anytime, and it's my full name, which is ElizabethSpanCraig@gmail.com. And you can also find that email address on my website, which is ElizabethSpanCraig.com. And I think I've got all of my social media linked to there. I'm on Twitter as Elizabeth F. Craig, and that's where I share writing links. So for any writers out there who want more information on writing. And I'm on Instagram as ElizabethSpanCraig and Facebook as ElizabethSpanCraigAuthor. That's a lot.
Yeah, that's a lot. But we'll have... Yeah. That information in the show notes. I know we will. Oh, you guys, and one more programming crazy update. After this week, so next Tuesday, there will be no podcast on Thursday mornings. I repeat, no podcast, and don't be coming to me asking where my podcast is, because it's being edited by me and a professional editor, and I told that editor yesterday who wants to work with me, I said, well, let's make it easy. Let's make it Tuesday mornings instead of Tuesdays and Thursday mornings. So, Elizabeth, you will be last and final hurrah for the Thursday morning podcast, because I'm just going to make it easy on everyone. So don't be coming to me asking me where your podcast is, because I know I have my fans out there who follow my work and follow my books and follow my personal journey with cerebral palsy. So I know it's a lot of programming up to date, but this is what I needed to do this morning. And I know Elizabeth has a couple of questions for me that she wants to ask me, so I'm going to let her ask me.
Good. Thank you. Yes. I was just thinking about all the things you have going on right now, and you have a lot going on, and you seem like you're streamlining it, like you were just saying, you know, making it so it's like a Tuesday, Thursday thing. You've got the editing down pat. But how do you balance your time with all the different things that you have going on simultaneously? You know, how do you manage it all?
Well, I have and had a really supportive family, and basically they set me up for success, and they're still setting me up for success behind the scenes. And so basically I couldn't do it without them, and I couldn't do it without my schedule. I rely on a schedule like this, no small, and what happens is I miss my schedule every Sunday. It gets emailed off to my dad because I rely on my dad so much, and that's how we do it. He gets my schedule. He approves it. He says yes or no, and that's how we do it. I mean, if I didn't have a schedule, I wouldn't be doing that, the stuff I was doing.
Yeah. I totally get that. I'm the same way with schedules. I have to, and if I have a change in my schedule, I don't know if you're this way, but if something changes in my schedule, I flip out. I just can't figure out how to change because it impacts everything else the rest of the day. It's like you know.
I had an interviewer, not book an interview, she booked an interview, and she didn't show up this morning. And sitting, you know, waiting for it, and I'm like, oh, God. So now she has to reschedule with my assistant. I'm like, you're the one that missed the interview completely, and I emailed her because she hasn't emailed me back. And so I'm,
oh, gosh.
And so I'm like, I put it on my schedule. I made time for it, and now you have to deal with rescheduling. So, no, the scheduling, the writing is a crucial point because that's how we make money. And when I gracefully exit education in the next couple of years, education being my day job, I won't have the W-2 coming in. I will just have my writing income coming in. And so I'm really happy to say that I'm getting closer to exiting education, or I may just keep the job without the paycheck, because I think educating the next generation is important. I may just be a volunteer and use my writing income as my full-time income. Although I don't know what I don't know how this is all going to shape itself out. I mean, as I said, I just had these conversations this morning with people. This morning. So I don't know the next 10 years is going to shape out. I mean, geez.
Yeah, but the nice thing is you're so driven that, you know, it's going to work out fine. I mean, whatever you decide on doing, and maybe you'll change your mind on what you want your focus to be, but you know it's going to be fine because, you know, you have a good work ethic and you're just really focused and you're driven. So it'll work out.
And I'm also getting a degree in journalism. So if I don't find a job in journalism, it will go straight back to my books and make my books even better.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you can take that and use that, you know, those skills that you get from that degree and use it towards your writing. Absolutely.
No, with education degree, you can't necessarily use to write books. I discovered that you can't skin a cat in 10 different ways in the education degree, whereas in the journalism degree, you can, skin that cat in 11 different ways.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with probably though in education, you probably get some good stories though, right? I would imagine you would.
Yeah. I held, it's so funny you mentioned that, because I held a story in my heart for 11 years, and I finally was able to write it. I did it as a fictional novel after I retired from teaching preschool last May, and I wrote my fictional novel. And so I did it as a fictional novel, and it's called The View from My Fabulous Teaching Desk. So if you guys want to go check that out, it's on audio tape, by the way, to you guys. And so if you guys want to go check that out, you're more than welcome to it. But I had to release what was in my heart, and I had to do it in a fictional novel because of otherwise my name would have been Mud if I did it as a way. And people really have received my journey well. I mean, as I said, I hit Amazon's number one for my memoir way back when, and I didn't know what the heck I was doing now. I'm smarter, and that one bent off in the publishing world. So I was completely shocked by that complete strangers picked up my book. And as a result, I started this podcast. So I'm completely shocked that my journey has inspired so many people. And, yes, it's still inspiring people, and I plan to do it until I can't do it anymore. And so I just want to ask you, what is the best tip for a first-time writer who's listening to this podcast and thinks, oh, I want to be like Elizabeth and win and make my own money and do all this cool stuff that they're doing, like a podcast interview and writing their own books. So what is your best tip, Elizabeth, for a first-time author?
Well, for most first-time authors, I mean, if you already hit your quota for the year, then you probably this wouldn't be a good tip for you, Wynn, but is to have, like, a really small goal every single day. Because to me, I feel like it's better to meet your goal every day than it is to have a huge word count every day, just in terms of building a habit. But, you know, once you have your habit established, you know, then you can definitely build on that. But to me, I mean, like when I had a little kid in the house and she would only watch Elmo's World for like 10 minutes or however long Elmo's World was, I found, you know, I could write a page in 10 minutes. And so if you write a page a day, then, you know, in less than a year, you have a book, a finished book. So, you know, just start really small and make small goals and just build on that.
Yes, I definitely agree. And my tip is to find a good editor. As well, you guys haven't heard this episode yet, I actually bought my editor on who's editing my book right now. I talk to her basically every single day. I send her an email about what's going on in my life so she knows. And so I basically interviewed my editor. Hopefully she doesn't destroy my book, but if she does, that's perfectly fine because that's her job, to destroy the book. And so I don't mind having an editor destroy my book. My editor the last time did not destroy my book, and my editor previously did not destroy my book. They were all very nice about it, but I gave her the advice. I said, you're welcome to destroy my book and tell me what is wrong and tell me what I need to do. And so she started laughing. She's like, I'm giving you the best I got. But we'll see what happens, and find a really good editor. Make that really good editor relationship, because they're going to be your right-hand woman or man. They're going to birth your book into a published work of art. So I would say use the Freelance Writers Association, Google Freelance Writers Association. Elizabeth, what are your tips about finding a good editor?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. The editing is extremely important. I think besides looking at professional associations, you can also look in the backs of books where writers that you know and enjoy have thanked people. I mean, self-published books, obviously, here. And because usually in the acknowledgments, if they haven't, they should have. You really should, you know, try to acknowledge the editor in the acknowledgments at the end of the book. And that's a great place to get names, especially if you've read the book and you know it's good and it's well edited and there's no mistakes or obvious mistakes in it. That's another good way of finding them. Yeah.
And I repeat, your family, even though they love you, is not your editor. I let my dad read my last book after it came back from my ghostwriter before it went to the editor, and I'm going to let him read this book after it comes back from my editor, because all families are not editors. And my dad goes, I'm an honor writer. I love you dearly, but I'm leaving the writing to you. And the family members are not editors, so don't expect, because family will say, I love it, I love it, I love it, and then publish it. And then your reader base will, and excuse my French, but they'll go, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
Because you'll come out of, I love it, I love it, I love it. And your reader base will go, what the hell is this? And it's like, oops. And so I repeat, the professional editors are gods and even though they cost money, I don't care about the cover. The cover you can get away with to a extent, but editors are the key. I designed my cover on I Come a Win myself. I did it via Create Space, but I had a professional editor from day one. I have since switched editor, and this is going to be my last switch. And so, but I had a professional editor day one edit my book. I said to myself, look, I have CP. I have my own limitations. I use Siri to write books, which that's a whole nother podcast in itself. But I will get my budget together for an editor. And that's how I got rocking and rolling, and that book turned into Amazon number one. So editors are the key. I don't care about the covers, per se, but editors are the key, and your family is not editors. They can read your manuscript. They can say, I love it. They can give you critiques on it. I give my dad full critiques power. I'm like, if you want me to change stuff, go ahead. And then, but editors are the key. Your family's not your editor.
Yeah, they love us, and that's the thing. They love us, and they don't want to hurt our feelings. So it's I'm with you on that. They can do, I mean, proofreading, excellent. Yeah, they do a good job. I know my mom does a good job kind of as a beta reader, and sometimes she'll be like, I don't understand what you were doing here. And that's great feedback, but I still have an editor, despite.
Great feedback.
Right.
Great feedback, but we don't want the I love you syndrome out in the world.
Yeah,
no,
right.
We don't want the I love you syndrome out in the world, and that's what I'm claiming, that I love you syndrome. No, and my dad read I Come a Win, and he goes, you missed a huge point that's important, and a huge point that I forgot to mention is I carried the Olympic torch in 2002. And completely forgot to put that in my autobiography. And when he said that, I'm like, okay, that's why I had to read to make sure that everything was perfectly fine. And he goes, no, you missed a huge flood, a huge momentous occasion in your life, and it's not your birthday either. And so,
that's too funny.
I scrambled and put that in. And so editors are the key, but your family member is perfectly fine. They're just giving you the I love you syndrome and say, I like it. But my dad gave me the I love you syndrome on my last book. He goes, I love it. And even the wizard editor, I'm like, you're not supposed to be the I love you syndrome on my book. Give me the full power there. You're supposed to help me craft a better book, but nope. And that's what I decided. Family is not your editor. Hire a professional editor, or you can border with someone, or you can go to a local writer's group. That's what I did with I Come a Win. I went to a local writer's group and found my editor through my local writer's group, but I would definitely recommend you guys, and Elizabeth echoes me on this one. Find an editor or ask me or tweet me or tweet Elizabeth and say, look, where do I go for editing advice? And we'll give you, I'll even give you my editor's website, or I'll give you my editor's contact. You guys, if you can be patient and wait while she's working on my book and working on others' books, or tweet Elizabeth and say, look, where do I go for editing? Because even if you are traditionally published, they still want to edit a book.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. They want it to look good. I mean, you want to look good, have it look good before you send it off at any rate. It needs to be edited.
Before I pitch agents to you guys, that's why I'm putting the time and money into editing and writing a good query letter. And I might ask a friend of mine who's actually helping with the query letter if I can show you guys the query letter on my Twitter account so you guys can see what a good query letter looks like. And I may, depending on what my editor says, if she says it's okay, I may post a couple pages of the edited version of my book on my Twitter, all depending if she says it's okay, which she'll probably say it's okay. But and you guys, my book should be back to me in about a month, and you guys will be on this journey with me, and so will Elizabeth. And so I thank Elizabeth for coming on Ask Liv and sharing her writing journey and sharing her writing tips. And you guys can find me on Twitter at Wynn Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y-12, C-H-A-L-E-S. And I'm always tweeting Elizabeth stuff or tweeting whoever I find interesting, and particularly writing tips. And Joanna Penn, P-E-N-N, who runs the Creative Penn podcast, is another great resource for editors, and she's all into the self-publishing industry. She left her day job in IT in London and is now making over six figures self-publishing. And so, and she talks about her latest book, The Map of Shadows, and she writes mysteries under J.F. Penn and does the creative career under Joanna Penn. So you guys may want to check that out. And if you look way back in the archives, I had Joanna Penn on my podcast, episode number one. I may do a replay of that podcast. I may do a replay, or I may post it again and see if I will probably post it again off my website. That's what I'll do. I'll tell my assistant to go back in the archives and grab the Joanna Pendant interview so you can hear about the self-publishing industry from a person that left the day job and is now making a full-time income self-publishing books.
Yeah, she's great. I have a lot of respect
for
her.
So, so we all do. We all do. And so that's another great resource for you guys. And Elizabeth is a great resource, and she's going to be a great resource for me. I didn't realize you were helping me on Twitter by tweeting tips. So
we'll
get
you.
All your information in the show notes. And so I'll be tweeting Elizabeth stuff out. And, of course, she'll be tweeting this interview out. I know she will. And
yes.
So people can find you, of course, on Amazon, on ACX, on iBooks, or
iBooks, Nook, and everywhere books are sold. They should be
everywhere books are sold. And
yeah.
I think how Elizabeth gets her books to iBooks is draft digital. Do you use that service? That's what I thought, because that's how I got my books. So Draft to Digital. Oh, and here's a good tip for you guys. Draft to Digital just partnerships with Findaway Voices. Findaway Voices is similar to ACX, and I actually had the CEO of Findaway Voices on this podcast, so you guys may scroll down in the feed and listen to Findaway Voices. And so there's many ways to produce audiobook, and there's many ways to skin this cat in the self-publishing industry. And as I said, I'm going with big boys, and even if little boys, the independent presses approach me, I'm going with the big boys because it's easier. Or self-published, which means I would have all my rights and all my creative control. So, you guys, there's a lot, and use resources like Elizabeth, or use resources like me, and we'll be happy to help you when we're not crazily writing books or getting journalism degrees. And again, you guys, I would love to thank Elizabeth for coming on my podcast and sharing her journey and sharing all her good writing wisdom. And I will catch you guys, well, by the time you guys hear this one, it will be Thursday. We have a couple more interviews coming out. And then I will catch you guys every Tuesday morning with edited podcast. And so please don't haunt me on Twitter saying where's my podcast, because where's that win? Because I already gave you the answers. So I want to thank Elizabeth again profusely, and of course I'll be following Elizabeth's journey as she'll be following mine. And I appreciate you guys supporting me and supporting the crazy wild ride of Ask Wynn. Thanks to you guys. Bye.
Thank you, Wynn.